ओम ज्ञानति विनन्दस्य ज्ञानजलशलाकाय चक्षुर्विन्दितमेन तस्मै श्रीगुरुवे नमः। जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासदि गौरभक्तवृंद। हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे हरे, हरे राम 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 हरे हरे। ओके, सो बिफोर वी डिस्कस दिस रेपिटेशन ऑफ जाकिर नायक, वी कैन ऑल्सो टेक सम क्वेश्चन लाइक इन द भगवद गीता क्लास there was one question about does a wife take karma of the husband. That is one question. So what do you think, like what the devotees feel about this?
Only the husband takes the wife's karma, wouldn't he?
Okay. Raji Prabhu, do you accept that?
Prabhu, you had to disconnect to take an important call. He's just joining back.
Acha. So...
actually, like, according to Hindu thing, when they do this... during the marriage when they do the seven, that is Fera and all. So at that time it is discussed that whatever pious activities is done by the husband, half of the profit goes to the five.
Okay, and if the wife does pious activities, then the credit won't go to the husband.
That is wives alone. There it is said that it is wise alone.
It is what?
It is wise.
It is wise.
Yeah.
Okay, so yeah, so you are saying that only the husband is taking the karma of the wife. And wife is not taking the karma.
Husband is taking the karma. That is not mentioned, Prabhuji. Like, that I have not heard of. But the punya done by husband is divided into two halves. That I have heard of.
Okay, so what you are saying is that the merit the husband receives, that is definitely going to the wife. But whatever the wife does, that merit does not go to the husband.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. Okay, so does everyone agree with this?
This is what I have heard. It's not like I agree to it. This is what I have heard.
So I'm asking that whatever you have heard or whatever you have read in Shastra also, so is it that the husband does not receive any credit for his wife's merit activities?
Actually, he should.
Yeah, so now, like, okay, so, I mean, probably you are saying because it does make sense, you know, and, like, definitely, okay, so now you are saying that the wife, whatever pious activities or merit she is saying, that the husband will also get the benefit.
Yes, because
the
it's a joint account, right? So it is when we are for the past.
Right. So now you are saying it is a joint account. So initially we were thinking that it is a single account. Right? But actually when you contemplate on it, you will actually understand that actually it's a joint account. It is not a single account or something. So does everyone agree with this principle?
मन तो नहीं करता मान रहे तो प्रभु
नहीं कर रहा है भाई, तो बेबी आप जो भी करोगे प्रभु जी को बेनिफिट नहीं मिलेगा,
मुझे उनका मिलता जाए वो ठीक है।
आप देना नहीं चाहते उनको बेनिफिट, सब हड़पना चाहते हैं
बेनिफिट तो ठीक
है, और उनका उनका बेनिफिट
भी हड़पना। व्हाट अबाउट टू कर्म प्रभु,
व्हाट अबाउट,
व्हाट अबाउट द बैड एक्टिविटीज, टू कर्म
तो गुड और बैड काम करना वो सब बैड, इट्स अ होल पैकेज इज देयर।
So Master is saying it's a joint account, whether it is good or bad, right?
ऐसा तो नहीं है ना प्रॉफिट प्रॉफिट मेरा लॉस लॉस हो रहा है, ऐसा तो नहीं हो सकता किसी में।
ओके Anyone has joined till now? Hari Bol? Yeah, Nirvika?
Yeah, Prabhuji.
Yeah, so you give your feedback.
Yeah, I mean, like, as far as I know, like, both of them, like, they do get the share of each other's pious and impious reaction. I mean, it's like mostly shared. But I was just but at the like, so this is like for pious and impious activities, and but when it comes to spiritual thing, I don't know. I feel I remember. I feel I've heard this somewhere that that credit is like yours. How much spiritual stuff you do?
That credit is what?
Like yours, I don't know. Like I'm not sure. Like whether what like pious and impious is a different thing. Like when it comes to like good like pious activities. Like for example, although you can help someone, you know, like for example, but I'm not sure if this is true or not. I don't know. I don't think it's exactly true or what. Like pious and impious things. If that's like sharing, like for example, my spouse is he does like very good activities and everything, pious activities. So the share of that I will get it. And like some share of it that I'll get it. Similarly, even for bad things, like if he does some bad activities and the reaction, not exactly the reaction, but somehow the result of it will even come to me, like because we are sharing the life together. Someone I don't know had said that when it comes to spiritual life, it's like everyone is flying their own plane. So I don't know, so I didn't, and he said that goes primarily to the person to the extent how much ever spiritual activities a person does.
Okay. Yeah, so it is, okay, any other devotee there want to comment? Where is Rajiv Prabhu?
Hare Krishna Prabhuji.
Bolia Prabhuji, what is your opinion?
I just joined in, so I couldn't gather the context clearly. What was the
question? वही है कि माताजी बोल रही है, एंजल माताजी बोल रही है कि प्रभु जी जो भी अच्छा एक्टिविटी करेंगे वो सब मेरे खाते में जाएगा, और मैं अगर लेकिन लाइक और वो अगर जो भी अच्छी एक्टिविटी करेंगे तो उसका रिजल्ट उनको ही मिलेगा, आपको नहीं मिलेगा। तो बेसिकली उनको सारी अच्छी चीजों को हड़पना है और सारी बुरी चीजें आपको देनी है।
पर वो तो प्रभु जी मैंने एक्सेप्ट किया था ना कमिटमेंट इन फ्रंट ऑफ अग्नि, सो दैट 50% आई विल टेक ऑफ द सेम एंड ऑल 50% ऑफ द गुड फ्रूट्स विल बी शेयर्ड विद हर। वो तो कमिटमेंट है, तो उसमें आई डोंट हैव एनीथिंग टू आर्ग्यू देयर। Hello.
Okay. Yes. Yeah, so basically, okay, we can actually consider two things here. Like we can consider the material benefits or the pious impious activities, and we can also see from the point of spiritual advancement. So I think everyone agrees that whatever pious impious activity one does, it's a joint account.
Okay.
Now, what about spiritual account? In the Shastra, what it is mentioned?
No, everybody is an individual soul.
Yeah, but what is mentioned in the Shastra about the spiritual account?
The spiritual account, according to that, is just sometimes when, like, even the seven generations are also, liberated. So if there is one devotee, a perfect devotee, this is what happened, I think, found in Prahlad Maharaj's case, Sandeep Maharaj's case, or Bhagirathi became the... No, not Bhagirathi.
So, okay. So you are saying that a devotee can liberate, generations also because of their bhakti potency. Right, they can basically they can free their generations from their karma and they can liberate them. Okay, so what to speak of,
only the spouse. That's not just limited to a spouse. It is more far-reaching than a husband-wife. Joint account. Here it is a family joint account.
See, actually, there are a couple of things. It's not a black and white picture here because many factors depend on this. And from the Shastra, in the pastime of Lord Kapila Dev, we know that Kapila Dev actually delivered his mother. And it is also mentioned, like Prabhupada does mention about this, that because in the context of Kardama Muni and Devahuti, so Kardama Muni left his house, he took renunciation and he left his family. So Prabhupada does mention that whatever advancement Kardama Muni made, 50% will go to his wife also, automatically, even though the wife is actually not that spiritually advanced. So now, so this thing we have to see from two angles. First of all, because, generally it is assumed that the husband is actually the guru of the wife. He is basically leading the wife. That is assumed. Generally, this is the case because, as Prabhupada mentioned a couple of times, that the husband or the male devotees, they are philosophically, they are more stable in their Krishna consciousness, whereas the women devotees, they are emotionally, they are more stable. But because they don't have a philosophical background, they don't have strong philosophical background, that is the reason they are not able to take spiritual life very seriously, in the sense that the realization to get detached and to make advancement in spiritual life is a very gradual process for them, compared to a male devotee. So obviously, we are not saying that this is always the case. This is generally the case. And it also depends on one's previous sukriti in spiritual life. It might be possible that a woman can also be more advanced than a man. Because let's say, in the past life, a male devotee, he is spiritually advanced, but somehow he gets attached to a woman. Then he will take a woman body in the next life and his devotion will be preserved by the Lord. So then whatever his emotions and devotion is, he will, in the woman body, that woman can make a lot of advancement. But obviously there will be restrictions, like because once you get the body of a woman, then there are certain restrictions. And so like, you know, for example, woman is not supposed to live as a brahmachari or she cannot take sannyas like that. This is mostly the case with for women devotees. So there will be certain obstacles for women devotees, but it is possible that they can be more advanced than the men or the male devotees. So then what can happen is, so it is assumed that generally, and as Prabhupada is also describing in Bhagavad Gita and various scriptures, Bhagavatam also, and you know in his teachings, that women are generally less intelligent than the men, you know, and that's the reason they have to be protected. So they should not be given freedom, and at any stage of life they should be given protection under father, husband or child. Okay. So this is a general principle. Mostly in the material world this will be there, it will be a general case. So now what happens is, you know, normally the husband is generally, he is detached and philosophically he is more strong, and he is emotionally is not so much connected, right? Because we know that women are more emotionally connected, they are attached, and it's difficult for them to be detached from relatives, from the material world. It's quite difficult for them. So it is assumed that if a male devotee is practicing Krishna consciousness, he will be probably more advanced, and he will be the one who will lead his family or his wife. Okay. So in that circumstances, now see, there is a condition also. Because it is clearly mentioned in the Bhagavatam that Devayati was actually serving Kardama Muni with two main qualities. Which are these two main qualities for any wife? Which are these qualities?
Chastity.
So chastity and surrender, or you can say submissiveness. Or you know, Prabhupada writes that generally it is the duty of the woman, or one of the characteristics of the woman, to use sweet words. A woman is not supposed to be rude, or she cannot, like, see, generally they are supposed to be controlled. They cannot try to control their husband, you know, because the male ego is stronger. So the natural system is that women are supposed to be controlled, and so that means that they will take a submissive role. Now Prabhupada also mentioned in that, you know, context, in one of the purports, that actually by using sweet words and being submissive and chaste to the husband, a woman can control the men very easily. So, and that is quite obvious, because when you use sweet words, when you are chaste, which men will not, you know, will not listen to you? It is obvious. But if a woman starts trying to control things, and she does not listen to the men, she is not having a submissive attitude, then things can take, it can take a opposite result. Okay. So in this context, it is assumed that the husband is more advanced than the, you know, wife. And even if the wife is not able to perform devotional service with that kind of intensity, but if she will just assist the husband, then 50% of the merit or credit will go to the wife. Okay. Now see, unfortunately what happens is that in Kali Yuga, wives are generally not submissive at all. And generally the husband is using sweet words and the wife is using harsh words. Okay. So what happens is, you know, the husband might be advanced in spiritual life, but you know, if the wife is not serving the husband, if she is not having a proper attitude, then maybe it is not necessary that that credit will go to the wife. Because see, whenever, you know, the transfer of mercy takes place, it should always go from advanced level to a less advanced level, right? From higher to lower. It cannot go from lower to higher. So in order to go from higher to lower, the recipient has to be humble. Without being humble, there is no question of, because what you are doing is you are disconnecting the channel. You are disconnecting the flow which is coming from Krishna through the representative of the spiritual master. See, what I'm saying is that the relationship between husband and wife is like a guru and a disciple. Ideally, theoretically, it is like that. Now, unfortunately, you know, in this time and age, no one will believe like that. No one will act like that also. Generally, women and, you know, the male, the husband and the wife, they have a more friendly relationship, or they might have a very harsh relationship with each other. So, and it is possible that the nature of both of them might be same. So, you know, if the husband is passionate and the wife is also passionate, then things will deteriorate. Okay. So, what it might be possible that whatever spiritual activities the husband is doing, if the wife cannot appreciate that, if the wife is not being chaste and, you know, humble to appreciate and recognize that, then it is possible that she might not get any credit. And she will never get taste in spiritual life. So it is true for every, you know, every guru and disciple relationship. Now, considering the other way around, a wife can be more elevated than the husband also. So in that case, the husband is supposed to follow the wife. So this is a transcendental principle. Okay, now, like, there are certain things that come along with the body which are connected to the material, natural laws of material nature. But when you talk about spiritual life, so there are certain transcendental aspects of that which can overcome those material aspects. Okay, so Prabhupada also says in some of his teachings that, I mean, some of his letters and you know, conversations, that if a woman is more advanced, then the husband can actually try to get inspiration from the woman, and the husband can render service. So generally, obviously, rendering of service, that's a, you know, something which is like, you know, really difficult, you know, for husband to do, because the male ego is stronger. But at least if the husband is getting inspiration and, you know, he appreciates that my wife is more advanced than me, and if the husband, you know, then husband can also get the credit, you know, because again, it's a joint account only. Like, there is no question of, you know, the transfer taking place in one direction. It is a special mercy given to the women that even if they don't perform devotional service, they can get the credit from their spouse, okay, just by assisting and serving them. And so similarly, it is an obvious thing. Like, you know, you, whenever you serve some advanced devotee, you will get the benefit for sure. So it is not that you say that it only works for the wife, it cannot apply to the husband. No, if a husband is serving his wife who is more advanced, you know, he's helping or he's supportive and he's encouraging her, even though he might not be able to serve her directly. But if he's, you know, he's giving full support to her, there is no obstacle, then definitely the credit will go to the husband also. You know, you assist in spiritual life, you know, you serve as a devotee of the Lord. Definitely, so irrespective of male or female devotees, one will get the credit and mercy. Right? So here we are, you know, when we are serving a devotee, definitely we are not concerned about pious, impious activities. We are concerned about spiritual advancement. So when you serve advanced Vaishnavas, you automatically will get that benefit. Okay. Now, see, the only thing is that in order to receive that benefit, one has to be humble. Because then what will happen? You are actually closing the flow. The channel is obstructed. The mercy which is flowing down, you are like, you know, purposefully you are actually placing an obstacle, and so it cannot flow down. Okay, so this is a basic principle of spiritual life. Whether it is whichever devotee it is, you know, wherever there is a relationship of a advanced Vaishnava with a, you know, less advanced Vaishnava, you know, the mercy flows from high to low. And but one has to be appreciative and humble enough to receive that. Okay, so in this particular scenario, so everyone will receive the benefit definitely. And when it comes in context with material and, you know, pious and impious activities, then also it's a joint account, because as we know that, see, it is not just that and this joint account is not just limited to you both. It is limited, I mean, it extends to everyone in the family. It also extends to the society. It extends to the nation also. It extends to the entire universe. Because the moment we are born in the material world, we are obliged and indebted to many personalities. Like, we know that we are indebted to the government, to the ancestors, to the forefathers, to the demigods, so we are actually indebted to every one of them. And that means that we are sharing our karma with them and they are sharing their karma with us. So generally, you know, it is mentioned that when the king is making, when the citizens are making a proper progress, then that gives 1/6 of their credit to the king. And so similarly, the king's karma also will affect the citizens. Okay, so whatever, if they perform pious activities, that will go to the king. And if they perform impious, that also will, the king has to bear for it. Like, so there are examples in the Shastra also where there were certain situations where, like, you know this particular Leela where when Brahmana's son were getting killed, you know, one by one. So Arjuna was, you know, he was extremely disturbed by this. And in the presence of Krishna, you know, he declared that actually he will save the Brahmana's son. Because I think around 6-7 sons were taken away by Yamraj. So the last one which took birth, Arjuna, you know, he actually took that vow that somehow he will protect that child. But that also went away. And then we know that this was a drama which was orchestrated by Mahavishnu in order to see Krishna and Arjuna together. Right? So what happens is, the Brahmana is upset because he feels that how can my children die in front of me when they have just taken birth. So actually there should be some fault with the administration. Then only these things can happen. If the administration of the king is impious, then only these kind of things can happen in the kingdom. Okay, so everyone is like sharing each other's karma in the material world. We are also influencing, and the environment is also influencing us. Okay, so in spiritual life, now see, there is also another thing, you know, where we have this yajnas and when we perform marriage ceremony. So the Purohit is also there, that time he is performing this yajnas and all that. So, you know, he also takes karma of the, people who are actually getting married, and he has to take the karma of them because he is the Purohit. So according to Shastra, any person who is taking a responsible role, is taking a leadership role, or is taking a, generally we have this, you know, the subordinates and, you know, the dependents, they are dependent on the, generally they are dependent on the father or leaders or kings like that. So whoever takes a responsible role, they have to take karma of their dependents. So they have to take karma. Okay. And that is a very general principle. This is how actually the material world is designed, that we are always sharing karmas with ourselves and with our environment also. And wherever there is a relationship of guru and disciple, irrespective of which devotee, you know, whether it is male or female devotee, the guru is supposed to take karma of the disciple. And at the same time, the guru is leading the disciple. Okay. So if the wife is more advanced, if the husband is hearing from the wife, he is learning from the wife, and he's making advancement, then ideally speaking, the wife becomes the guru for the husband. So that means that, you know, the wife is actually taking karma also of the husband. So that is, you know, it all depends on the relationship. Okay, so does this make sense?
ओके प्रभु जी, हरे कृष्णा प्रभु जी.
ओ यू जॉइंड?
यस प्रभु जी, आई जॉइन. आई एम नॉट वेल बट
हरि बोल. एक्चुअली व्हेनेवर यू आर नॉट वेल दैट टाइम एवरीवन शुड जॉइन स्पेशली.
So what it means,
so that you'll get you know recovered very quickly. You'll
okay,
get well soon.
Okay. Yes, probably my question. Actually, I'm suffering from fever 102 like that and cold.
You have fever?
Yeah, 102 fever right now.
Okay. Anyways, you know, I'm just like kidding. You know, obviously this is something that we desire. That you know, in spite of external circumstances, we keep continuing. But you know, if you want to take rest, you can take rest. No? It's like
okay. But my question is, right now you said no that Purohit to perform marriage ceremonies, he will also share that karma of that wife and husband.
Yeah, he has to take
so
karma,
so
yeah.
So how his karma will destroy? Then he's taking a lot of karma of so many persons, so many couples.
Yeah, so see, that is the reason. The Shastra very clearly says, what does the Shastra say? Whoever is taking the karma, they should get rinse of their karma. And for that, they have to go to the Tirthas. Okay. They have to take bath in the holy. They have to take the advantage of so many things, which is described in the scriptures. That's how, you know, if they take bath and if they perform certain purificatory activities or they undergo some austerity and penances, then they get purified through that. And obviously, the best kind of purification, which is greater than even taking bath in Ganga or Yamuna, is basically
holy name.
To
holy
receive the mercy of the Vaishnavas.
Vaishnavas, yeah.
Because, see, we know from Shastra that we go to the holy dhams or the Tirthas to purify ourselves or to get rid of the sinful reactions. So we leave the sinful reactions in the Tirthas or in the transcendental water of the Ganges or Yamuna. But then, you know, Yamuna and Ganges also want to get rid of the karmas or the sins that have been shared to them,
yeah.
Right? So then, you know, so the question was, Ganga Maya was asking this question, that how will I get cleansed of all these things? And then the reply was, many devotees will come and just by their glance, you know, they will take away all the karmas or the sinful reactions. So the most powerful process is actually to receive the dust of the feet of a pure devotee. That is the most powerful process. Not only your karmas, but you know, immediately one can get devotion to the Lord.
Yeah. So that but is the nowadays, But nowadays, these things are not happening. No, Purohits are not going to take bath in holy dip like that.
See, that is the reason. See, I mean, there are Purohits who are probably, they have some bad habits also. They are probably chewing tobacco. Or they might be smoking also. You know, so that's the reason. What happens? See, generally when a Purohit is actually performing this yajna, you know, his potency will also matter. If he does not have potency, the yajna will also not have so much potency. So the more the pure a person is, the more potency or the more potent the sacrifice becomes. And if the person is not, you know, is a sinful person, is taking the role of a Purohit, the entire thing will be nullified. Like there will be no credit only. Because in the first place there was no potency only, you know, there was no purity in the process. So there is no question of the, you know, the yajna itself will actually be a failure. So see, like, it's not just about, you know, having bad habits or something, but main thing is how much faith they have also in the process. You know, most of the Purohits who are performing these ceremonies, they are just doing it to gain money, whether they have that kind of faith or not, or whether they are following proper procedure, proper standard of worship. That is all secondary. Plus, the receiver also, those who are getting married or those who are performing these ceremonies, what kind of faith they have, how much faith they have. If they don't have faith, then they will not receive anything. Because see, spiritual life always means you, so one cannot say that, okay, it's all, you know, it finally it all depends where, you know, the person who is performing the sacrifice is responsible for everything. No. Even if he is a pure devotee, but if you are not eligible, you are not qualified to receive the mercy, then it will be unsuccessful. So the recipient and the person who is giving the mercy, they both should be pure. This is actually the method of getting purification, becoming purified in the process, because it does not just depend on the speaker, it also depends on the recipient or the devotees who are hearing. It depends on the faith of both of them. So in case of Parikshit Maharaj and Sukhdev Goswami, it's an ideal combination because they both were pure. They were extremely eager to hear and share. So that's the reason it had a transcendental effect immediately. So always remember one thing, that spiritual life is, it's not dependent only on the devotees who bestow it to others. It depends on the recipients also. If the recipient is in the previous life, you know, he has a lot of sukriti, you know, he can receive that taste for devotion even from, you know, Kanishtha Adhikari. You know, he may get bhakti from a Kanishtha Adhikari also. So, and he will make progress, you know, he can go to the level of Uttama also. So it is not, see, it is up to, finally, see, that is how it comes down to what, like Nirvika said, that one has to fly their own plane. So this is the meaning of that. That no matter how much amount of association of pure advanced Vaishnava you take, no matter how much amount of bhakti you perform, if the recipient's heart does not transform, then it is back to square one only. There is not going to be any effect. Unless and until in a very, you know, rare extreme circumstances, a pure devotee is bestowing someone directly prema, or the lad is directly bestowing prema without any consideration, without any qualification, then we can say that, okay, the recipient was a direct mercy of the Lord, so he did not have to do anything. But ideally and generally, this is a combination, that you, the speaker has to be pure and the recipient has to be pure. Then this message will flow purely. Okay, so we cannot blame, you know, the speaker or the person who are performing these things, but to a lot of extent it is our own faith also in the process, and how much willing we are to transform ourselves or to practice bhakti very seriously. Otherwise, it's a very simple thing. You just have to keep taking the dust of the, you know, feet of the pure devotee, smear on your body, and immediately will get prema. There is no need for doing any sadhana. Actually, what is the meaning of taking dust of the pure devotee? What is the meaning of that?
Following
following instructions. Yeah. Following the instructions of pure devotees. Dust, see, you might take dust and okay, it might have some effect also. You might get rid of some certain karmas also. But that is not the goal. The goal is basically to achieve prema. And prema can only be achieved when we follow the instructions of a guru. There is no possibility of prema manifesting in us without the mercy of pure devotees. The Bhagavatam very clearly says, unless one smears the dust of the pure devotee, they cannot make any advance in spiritual life. That is not possible. So, see, the entire Bhagavatam, right from beginning to end, it is only conveying one message. And what is that message? Don't say Harinam Sankirtan.
Bhagavat Prem?
No.
Vaishnava's mercy?
Yeah, association of devotees. Each and every canto, if you open, what is the message all the pure devotees are giving to others? Each and every canto, association of devotees, association of devotees, association of devotees. In fact, for association of devotees, devotees have left the association of Krishna also. They have left the association, like, you know, Balram himself, he left the association of Krishna to be with the Vrajvasis. Uddhav also left the association of Krishna to be with the Vrajvasis. So many devotees, okay, they did not want to take association of Krishna so much, but they were more eager to take association of the devotees of the Lord. So, right from the beginning to end, Bhagavatam is talking about the association of devotees. Each and every canto. Kapila Dev instruction, association of devotees. Then, you know, whichever incarnation you talk about, Rishabdev's instruction, association of devotees. See, it will conclude with that. You can go through it and, you know, you'll find that every incarnation or wherever there is an instruction between the guru and the disciple, it culminates in association of devotees. Right? Okay. So, any question or comment on this? So, generally speaking, whoever is dependent on someone or someone who is more advanced, that person will take the karma of their dependents. This is what, according to the Bhagavatam, according to the Shastra. For example, now, let's say, you know, the spiritual master is taking karma of the disciple. But if the disciple is advancing in spiritual life, that credit and merit also goes to the spiritual master. Okay, and whatever impious activities he does, that also the spiritual master suffers for that. So if the spiritual master is a pure Vaishnava coming from the spiritual world, then the karma will not have any effect on him. Externally, he might display certain symptoms, like, you know, Prabhupada mentioned that a pure devotee exhibits illness for three reasons. Anyone knows? Like, you know, Prabhupada was also getting ill again and again. For what purpose he was, you know, and Prabhupada also said that if the disciple will do some certain impious activity or sinful activity, spiritual master has to bear that in the form of, you know, he has to see some bad dream or he has to physically suffer. So Prabhupada said the pure devotee, he will exhibit this for three reasons. What are the three reasons? Anyone can guess? It's given in the Lilamrit, Prabhupada Lilamrit. See, one reason though we have already discussed, so it is obvious. What is that one reason?
Sinful activities of the disciple.
Huh?
Sinful activities of a disciple.
What?
Sinful activities of a disciple.
Yeah, okay. So because he is taking sinful activity for a disciple, sinful reaction, so he will display certain illness, symptoms of illness. Or he will experience some bad dream. That is one thing. Second is, I don't think anyone would probably know the second and third one. But still, devotees can guess. Any guess? Nirvika?
Maybe Rajiv Prabhu? The guru would show it so that the disciples realize that whatever they are doing, it is affecting the guru. So they themselves will be very cautious and not do it.
No, that is okay. So that actually can be, it's in the same category. Like the guru will you know, get the reaction so that the disciple will actually understand that he is not supposed to commit that sinful activity. So that can in the same category, but other two things are also there. Rajiv Prabhu?
Hi, Prabhuji.
Yeah, so are you hearing?
Yes, sir. Wapas disconnect ho gaya, then I have to reconnect.
Okay. Yeah, so when you don't answer, you know, that then I feel that, okay, maybe probably you are not there or you are not hearing. Because generally you are always, you know, giving feedback. So, okay. Anju Mataji?
Prabhuji, what I'm just a guess that if the sadhana is not done properly by the disciple.
The sadhana?
Sadhana is not properly done by the disciple.
No, see, sadhana is something that is, it is actually quite difficult to say and quite, see, that's the reason. When we take initiation, the spiritual master does not say that you have to chant 16 rounds purely or without offenses. He does not take that kind of vow because he knows that everyone is going to commit offenses. So, and you know, when we commit offenses, obviously he will say that, you know, these are the 10 offenses one should avoid, but he will not make us take a vow that we will not, you know, somehow will only chant purely, because that is not possible. He knows that very well. So that means that the sadhana is obviously compromised, you know, and that is actually a part and parcel. Every spiritual master knows that for every disciple. And it's a very long process. It's not something, you know, one cannot just become a pure devotee overnight. Okay. It can actually take lifetimes also. So, so it is not that, you know, because of sadhana, the spiritual master will, you know, have effect. Okay, is Vandana Mataji there?
Yes, Prabhuji.
Hari Bol, when did you join Mataji?
I was a bit late, I think it's around 9:35.
9, okay, that's fine. Yeah, so you are hearing everything?
Yes, Prabhuji.
Okay, so any feedback?
In fact, even I had the same thing, like, you know, maybe the sadhana that we are doing is not proper, so that is affecting Guru Maharaj, but then you said the...
Sadhana and sinful activities, these are two different things. Sinful activities can definitely affect, but sadhana, it's not like, you know... Okay, so the second thing is that a spiritual master can display this illness if he goes into ecstasy. Okay, that is one thing. And he can, the third one is that he can also display his illness in order to engage his disciples to serve him, to give his Vapu association. So these are the three things a spiritual master will show: external illness or some kind of disturbance, so that, you know, these three things are there.
Prabhuji, can you explain?
Okay, so,
like, if he's gone in ecstasy, why will he show these symptoms?
Yeah, so see, like, for example, Gaurgoin Maharaj, you know, like, everyone has heard about him. He went into ecstatic symptoms, you know, when he was leaving the body. And so, definitely, one of the ecstatic symptoms, you know, when you get to the state of bhava and prema, body cannot sustain these symptoms, all these symptoms. And at the state of prema, generally one has to leave the body, because the body, actually the material body, cannot sustain these symptoms. These are very intense symptoms, which is transcendental symptoms, and the body actually cannot sustain that. So so externally, you know, these the symptoms are internal, but externally it can have some effect. and that can cause some kind of so basically it is a transcendental emotion, but externally it seems that the spiritual master is actually has undergone some kind of disorder, like, you know, externally. So in terms of, you know, he might get sick because the body is unable to sustain the symptoms, because, you know, when you keep crying constantly for the Lord, or when your heart is completely melted because of love, so that will definitely affect the body. Okay, like that. So signs of ecstasy can cause some kind of illness also. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So yeah. So these are the three things. So, anyways, you know, the point is that a Nitya Siddha devotee or a liberated soul, he can take unlimited karma of the disciples, because he is anyways a liberated soul. So karma will not have any effect. But when he is in the sadhaka form, he will show this karmas manifesting in external ways. Okay, just to teach us three things. And now for a non-liberated devotee or a guru, so that is the reason your Prabhupada says many times that a guru should not take more disciples. If, you know, so a guru has to take only these many disciples for which he is capable to take karma. Okay, and that is the reason generally a preacher is advised to take more disciples, because when you are preaching, you are depending on the mercy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And by that, by the mercy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, by the order of Prabhupada, the preacher will get some kind of extra potency that will allow him to accept more disciples. But when you are doing only bhajan, when you are not preaching, then the bhajnanandi should not accept more disciples. He has to accept very few disciples. Okay, depending on his capacity of taking karma or taking the reaction of the sinful activities. Otherwise, what will happen? It will influence the guru, and the guru can fall down. If he will accept disciples beyond his capacity, then he will fall down because of that, because of getting influence from the reaction of the karma. So one is not supposed to accept karma. So one has to only accept that much for which he is capable. Okay. So anyways, you know, these are the dealings of, you know, like, you know, see karma, this, you know, and as Anju Mataji was also saying that, you know, a devotee can actually liberate the, you know, his generations. Like, obviously it depends on the level of advancement. Kanishtha liberates 3 generations, Madhyama liberates 14 generations, and Uttama liberates 100 generations. So, does it mean that, you know, if that devotee is a woman, she cannot liberate the generations? Of course not. She can. A devotee is a devotee, irrespective of any external consideration. So any devotee can actually liberate and benefit their generations. Okay, because of their spiritual potency. Okay, so there are injunctions in the Shastra which say many, many things. So we cannot just take one thing and, you know, promote that. We have to take all these statements from Shastra. You know, just as, like, you know, we were discussing in the Bhagavad Gita class, that is the Lord, like, you know, just because there are 2 verses in Bhagavad Gita, 16th chapter, where Krishna is saying, that, you know, describing the divine and demoniac nature, where the Lord is saying that I perpetually cast these demons in the material world again and again. So, you know, they will keep taking repeated births, and they will not get a chance to come to me. So this is obviously, it's an expression of the Lord, it's a bhav of the Lord, in order to express his displeasure and dissatisfaction and disappointment with all the jivas who are causing disturbance to the society, or they are also harassing the devotees. So he is just saying, you know, as a father, that, you know, that just to make sure that, you know, like they understand that he has, you know, everyone is belonging to him, everyone is his children, and so we should not do harmful things to them. So it's just an expression of his desire. And you know, so certain times the Lord will take a very heavy and serious position. Like as a, you know, a father can sometimes become very heavy with the child, just to rectify them, just to correct them out of love. And you know, to like actually keep them in the right track. Otherwise they might get deviated. So he might express certain emotions and bhav at particular times. But overall, when you consider, when you read about the glories of Krishna, glories of Lord, we'll see that his mercy is unlimited. It's not that the Lord can send someone perpetually to hell. You know, that is definitely not the purpose of creating the jiva. That would not serve that purpose. So when there are certain statements like this in the Shastra, we should understand that it is just one of his bhav. You know, at a particular circumstance, when he wants, you know, to make sure that these demons, they will learn their lesson well, and they will change themselves, right? So like that. So the multiple statement in the Shastra, which talks about transferring of karmas and who is taking whose karma and who is taking whose benefit, you know, merit and credit and all that. And then there is, you know, there is also another thing which I think we have discussed earlier, that it's you know, you cannot transfer your merit to someone else unless you yourself are offenseless in your demeanor. Like you cannot transfer your spiritual credit to someone unless you yourself are full of offenses. I mean, without offenses, okay? If you are offenseless, then only you have the shakti and the potency to transfer your credit to others. So we don't do that. Instead, we depend on the mercy of the Lord, and we, even if there is a transfer of credit, that credit is actually transferred because of the Lord's, I mean, because we pray to the Lord to do it. So we don't depend on our own strength. We depend on the strength of the Lord. So that's how we can actually transfer our credit to someone, and that credit actually is not ours. It is the Lord's credit, or it is our Guru's credit. So if the Guru is very advanced, you know, and the disciple is sincerely following the Guru, he is the pet of the Guru, then even though the disciple might not be very advanced, but just because he is on the right track and very faithful, loyal to the Guru, and he has served the Guru, that has pleased the Lord. And so even if the disciple will make a simple prayer to the Lord, that prayer will be fulfilled because the Guru is very dear to the Lord. And whoever is very dear to the Guru becomes extremely dear to the Lord, right? So that way the Lord can easily transfer the credit. But our credit is basically, we cannot, you know, we don't have any strength to transfer our credit to someone. Okay? So although there are statements in the Shastra which talks about, you know, you do certain activities, pious activities, and then you transfer that credit. But do remember one thing, that, you know, without having much potency, you cannot do it. Because the principle is that you have to save yourself first and then try to save others. Okay, by transferring your own credit, if you become, you know, your credit goes to nil, then what will happen to your spiritual life? You know, just as like, you know, we are discussing about this example of Guru, he cannot accept more disciples because he cannot take karma of so many disciples, otherwise he falls down. So similarly, the same principle is for every devotee. So depending on the stature and the advancement of a Vaishnava, they can or they have the potential to transfer that much amount of credit. Okay. Now if you do certain extra things, then it's a different thing. You cannot compromise from your own sadhana. So like for example, 16 rounds is for you. It is not for others. Don't try to make an adjustment to transfer the credit of your 16 rounds to give some to someone others. Then you will fall down soon. But you do extra things and then you pray to the Lord to transfer the benefit or, you know, this. Now, how much potency that will have, it all depends on your character or your faith in the guru, you know, the faith in the process, all these factors are there. How much, you know, if you are really advanced, then yeah, it can happen. But if you are a Kanishta and then, you know, you are speaking big, big things, then definitely it will not work. Okay. Yeah, so this is about transfer of karma.
మీరు మాట్లాడే వ్యక్తి మీ కార్ని హోల్లో పెట్టారు. దయచేసి లైన్లో వేచి ఉండండి.
యా హరి బోల్. ఓకే, సో ఇస్ దిస్ క్లియర్? ఎనీ కమెంట్? ఓకే, సో నౌ లెట్స్ గెట్ బ్యాక్ టు జాకిర్ నాయక్. Okay, so how many of you have seen the videos? Almost every one of you. Vinita Madhari, are you there? How many of you have seen? So Raji Prabhu has already seen, I think. Angel Mataji has seen. Anju Mataji has seen. Vandana Mataji, have you seen?
No, Prabhuji, I have not seen it.
Okay, Nirvika?
No, even I have not seen.
Achha, Radhika Kishori, are you there? She was supposed to join. I don't know if she has joined or not. Okay. Okay, how many of you are aware of Zakir Naik?
I am.
Those who have not seen the videos, how many of you are aware of him? Are you aware?
No, Prabhuji.
Okay, Nirvika?
I think he's some author or something, right? I think.
Author? No, that is a very... I think that is a very derogatory remark for him.
But I do know that he is like the founder of some Islamic foundation, something, and he's like a very influential person in that.
Yeah, so he's a very, very big person. Obviously not for us. For us, he's like, you know, a joker. But for them, he's like a messenger of Allah, you know. So... And I think, you know, recently he has been banned from Sri Lanka also. Like, he's not allowed to go to Sri Lanka now. And he has received a lot of criticism from India also, from many Hindus. Because what he's doing is, basically, is misinterpreting Hindu religion. And he's presenting that to lakhs of Hindus. And he's trying to convince them that Islam is actually the highest religion. And even the Hinduism also, finally it should culminate to Islam. That is what he is trying to promote and convince everyone. Okay. So he has been, you know, so he knows Sanskrit. He has learned, like, right from his childhood days, you know, college days and everything. You know, he has studied different religions over the world. And he has memorized many, many shlokas from Vedic scriptures and from different religion scriptures also. And so he's basically, what he's trying to do is, he's convincing everyone that, just as, you know, we say that our Gaudiya Vaishnav philosophy is the highest philosophy and one can achieve the highest destination. So similarly, he's claiming that our, you know, Quran and Islam, they are the highest. Everything else is actually inferior to Islam and Quran. Okay, so he's trying to prove that. So now in these videos, he has, and these are connected to ISKCON, you know, directly connected to ISKCON philosophy or Gaudiya Vaishnava philosophy. So certain claims, you know, he has made. Okay, so now those who have seen the videos, what are these claims?
The first one is that, according to that ISKCON says Bhagavad Gita and Bhagavad Gita are superior.
Mother is not able to hear you.
Hello?
Yeah.
Can you hear me, Prabhuji? What he has claimed is that
ISKCON people say that Bhagavatam and Bhagavad Gita are superior to Vedas, and he says, but he contradicts that.
See, yeah, so first claim is that Madhav is saying, he's claiming that Bhagavad Gita and Bhagavatam is inferior to Vedas or Shrutis. First of all, actually, he is not so much familiar with Srimad Bhagavatam because he does not quote Bhagavatam at all. Because, you know, he knows that maximum Hindus, they believe that Bhagavad Gita is the national scripture for the Hindus. And it is the most popular common manual, you know, of the Hindus. So he has thoroughly learned some verses from the Bhagavad Gita, and he is generally is quoting from that. So what he is saying is that Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam, they are, or Bhagavad Gita is actually inferior to the Vedas. Okay, so now how will you refute? So see, what explanation he gives?
He gives about the deity worship. So he says that according to Vedas, there is no deity form.
Yeah, we'll discuss that after we finish this. But regarding how does he try to prove that Bhagavad Gita is inferior to the Vedas?
Form and all, according to that, he said two times that he has quoted Bhagavad Gita also 7.2, saying that demigod worship, 7.20, demigod worship and all, and then he has related the demigod worship to Krishna worship. So this is what he tried to do.
Okay, but like, how does he say that Bhagavad Gita is inferior?
Okay, Smriti and Shruti, yes. He said about the Smriti and Shruti. Then he said that all the Shrutis are always more advanced than Smritis, and Vedas are Shrutis, and whereas Bhagavad Gita is a Smriti because it's a part and parcel of Mahabharata. This is
right, yeah. Okay, yes. So what he is claiming is that Bhagavad Gita, so now we have the Shrutis and Smritis. And why is the Shruti more advanced or you know, like more authoritative?
Because
why is the Shruti is more authoritative than the Smriti? What is the reason?
Shruti directly comes from Lord.
Yeah, that is what he is saying. That Shrutis means something that you hear directly from the Lord. Okay, and what is Smriti?
It is that once you hear and then you say again, that when you write again, that is the Smriti.
Yeah, so basically Smritis are the ones which are remembered and then which are passed down by the sages. Okay. So now, so that's the reason, you know, he says that Shruti is superior to Smritis. And now, because Bhagavad Gita is part of Mahabharata, so it is a Smriti. So ideally, and then, you know, what he says, he quotes, you know, Prabhupada, you know, from the introduction, and he says that, you know, Prabhupada is writing that Bhagavad Gita, you know, is like, you know, milking the cow, basically, okay? And, you know, so basically, Arjuna is the one who is actually, churning, you know, to get the cow or the milk, something like that. So basically, you know, the meaning is that the Bhagavad Gita is extracting the essence of the Vedas. So it is like the milk. Bhagavad Gita is the milk because the essence is not different from what the object is, you know. So then only we say, see, now he is saying that Bhagavad Gita is inferior, okay, but he does accept, you know, that because obviously Krishna says directly, and but he does not quote this because in the Bhagavad Gita, the Lord very clearly says that sarvasya chaham vidhi sanivishto matasmati gyanam upanam cha Vedesh Sarva Amavedya Vedanta Krit Vedavit Eva Chaham. Now he is not quoting that, and he is not saying that Krishna is saying that I am the knower of Vedas, I am the compiler of Vedas, and the purpose of Veda is to know me. Okay, that is a slok directly in the Bhagavad Gita, but he is not quoting that. What he is saying is that Bhagavad Gita is promoting certain things which is actually contradicting the Shrutis. So then obviously whenever if something contradicts the Shrutis, then the Shruti has to be accepted and that thing has to be rejected. Okay, because the Shruti is supposed to be superior. Okay, so now what are the faults in this claim? What?
Bhagavad Gita, though it is a part of Smriti, but it is Shruti because it is directly coming from the Lord.
Right, yeah. So the first claim that Bhagavad Gita is a Smriti is not 100% accurate because yeah, it is a Smriti because it is a part of Mahabharata, but at the same time, it is not different from the Shruti because it is directly spoken by the Lord. So it is Shruti and Smriti both. Okay. Now, one more thing. If he says that the Bhagavad Gita is contradicting the Shruti, but the Bhagavad Gita is clearly saying that it is Bhagavad Gita is the essence of the Vedas, that is clearly stated in Bhagavad Gita. So how can the essence, see, when do we say that something is the essence of something? When the essence is in line with the subject matter, right? If the essence contradicts the original subject, then how can we say that it is the essence? So, when Bhagavad Gita is clearly saying that this is the essence of the Shruti, then how can the Bhagavad Gita contradict the Shruti? That is something which is absurd. Okay, so he is trying to say that the Bhagavad Gita is basically contradicting and that is why it cannot be the essence. Okay, that is the first thing. Now second thing, let us try to understand what is actually Shruti and Smriti. Okay, what is actually what is the importance of Smriti? So, are you all awake? Are you all hearing? Inspired to have this discussion or like it is a bit technical?
I'm hearing.
Yes, yes.
Okay, everyone is hearing. Rajiv Prabhu, where are you?
He's sleeping, Prabhu.
Huh?
He's falling asleep.
Oh, really?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah, Prabhu, I'm listening.
Okay, so are you hearing attentively?
I'm listening with my eyes closed, but I'm listening.
Okay, your eyes can be closed, Prabhu, but your mind and your ears should be open.
Ears should be open, yes, yes.
Okay. Okay, so I hope everyone is able to follow. So now, see, if I don't know how many of you, there are some new devotees here, but how many of you have heard my podcast in Purushottam Mass?
If I've heard a couple of them, Prabhuji.
Yeah, so then, you know, there was one podcast which was very, very important and it was trying to establish the same point that actually the Smriti is not different from the Shruti and the Shrutis, they have a transcendental nature. That is also equally important. In fact, one can say that the Smritis are more important than the Shrutis. So, that entire podcast, it has the details. It has Shastric references also. How in the Shruti itself, it is mentioned that without the help of Smritis, one cannot understand the Shrutis. And what is the meaning of Purana? What is the meaning of Purana? So we know that one of the meaning is history. Purana means history. Okay. What is the other meaning of Puran? Okay. What is the meaning of Purana? Purana.
Old.
Huh?
Old. Purana. Old.
End. End or complete, right?
Huh. Achha, Purna.
Purna is old. Purna. Purna. Right? Purana. Purana, you know, means full stop. The end, you know. So, the Puranas, they complete the Shrutis. Okay, and so, you know, there are references in the Shrutis where it is mentioned the Rig Veda, it is mentioned that the Shrutis, the Smritis, the Itihasas, they are all coming from the breathing of the Supreme Lord. So now, tell me one thing, if all these things are coming from the breathing of the Supreme Lord, how it is possible that any human intervention is taking place here? It's a transcendental thing which is directly coming from the transcendental body of the Lord. So, it means, see, I will tell you something very interesting. There are, now you know that, you know, we had also taken the Srimad Bhagavatam class, if you all remember, Glories of Bhagavatam. And I have mentioned one point, that the Bhagavatam is actually having 18 cantos, 12 cantos with 18,000 verses. Everyone knows that. If you really see the first two cantos, they are actually not even including Sukhdev Goswami and Parikshit Maharaj. There are more discussion between Sudgo Goswami and Sonak Rishi or the sages of Naimisharanya, right? So now how does the Bhagavatam include the first two cantos? When, you know, actually Bhagavatam is basically, everyone knows that it is a conversation between Parikshit Maharaj and Sukhdev Goswami. So how can the Bhagavatam also include the narrations of the first two cantos? Anyone remembers what answer I gave? Okay, so you can try to think about it. One more thing is that the Mahabharata itself, it is mentioned in the Shrutis that the Mahabharata is actually to be considered as the fifth Veda. So that gives the Mahabharata a additional transcendental nature. Now, in the Shruti itself, it is mentioned that the Shruti must be completed with the Smritis. So that is another, you know, evidence from the Shruti itself. Now, the Shruti, see, if Shruti is superior, but the superior scripture is saying that the inferior scripture is actually equal in nature. I mean, so-called inferior, according to them, is actually equal in nature to Shrutis. So now one can ask the question that, okay, if Shruti and Smriti are equal, then what is the need of categorizing into two different divisions? Like, Smritis can also be called as Shrutis. Why it has to be called as Smriti? You know, the answer is that the Smriti, it has a specific purpose. Because Smriti are generally meant for those who are less qualified or who are degraded. And the Shrutis, so Shrutis are more esoteric, they are more complex, whereas Smritis, they are very relevant and they are very approachable. So they are meant for serving those category of people who are less qualified or who are degraded. So they can, less intelligent people, they can understand the Smritis very well. So in order to give mercy to these kind of people, we have the Shruti and Smritis. So it is designed in such a way that everyone can easily understand. Whereas Shrutis, not everyone can actually understand. And there is a qualification required to understand the Shruti, which is basically you have to become a Brahmana For that, you have to have the process of, you have to undergo the process of upanayanam. Okay, which is basically, upanayanam means the spiritual master will, you know, like you basically come close to the spiritual master. So, nayanam, you know, which basically means close to the ear, like that. Okay. So, it has to be received by the mercy of a guru. You know, you have to become qualified to receive that knowledge. You want to understand shrutis, then you have to get qualified for that. Okay. Whereas smritis, they don't require any qualification because they are meant for less qualified people. So, there has to be a gradation. There has to be a discrimination. But they are both transcendental in nature. They are both equal in nature. That is what the shrutis themselves say. Okay. So, this is the transcendental equality between shruti and smriti. Now, coming back to this question, that how did the first two cantos also fit in the Bhagavatam? So, because see, the answer will actually make you convinced that the shruti and smriti, it's not something which is man-made. It is coming from God. Although it seems that someone is intervening and they are passing down the message or they are doing some compilation, but ultimately it has already been designed by the Lord. It has already been arranged by the Lord. So when you know when we say that the breathing in the, you know, the same breath, in the same breath, the shruti is there, the smriti is there, that means it's already designed. It's already there. It's a matter of time in the future that some sage, empowered sage like Vyasdev, will compile and he will present this Bhagavatam, okay, or the smritis. But this is already there, right from the beginning. Please understand this. Now, even though incidences now the breathing of the Lord, when the Lord is actually exhaling, then universes are created. We all know that. So then where is the question of Satyug, Tretayug, Dwaparyug, Kaliyug? There is no question of time also manifested that time, right? So, but when you say, when the Shruti is saying that these things are coming from the breathing of the Lord, it means that right from the beginning, this knowledge is already there. It's just going to manifest in respective Yuga cycle. Do you understand this? So similarly, the same thing with Bhagavatam also. The first two cantos of the Bhagavatam, it is mentioned, you know, that they were, although it is predicting future events and sequences, but these were already known to Vyasdev, and so he inserted them in the Srimad Bhagavatam beforehand. So basically, he is like forecasting that these events of the first and second canto, they will happen in the future, but it is also a part of the Srimad Bhagavatam. Is everyone following this? Haribol?
Yes, Haribol.
Yeah, so are you able to understand?
He said that the two cantos, although they are a conversation between Shruti Goswami, though the Srimad Bhagavatam is actually meant to be a conversation between Shruti Goswami and Parikshit Maharaj, still these two, this is like a conversation within a conversation, this format.
Yeah, so this is something which is already known to Vyasdev, the future events that will take place. But because it is pertaining to the conversation between Sukhdev Goswami and Maharaj Parikshit, this entire thing is actually called the Srimad Bhagavatam. So you cannot say that the first two cantos should be excluded from Bhagavatam. In fact, the Puranas also, they describe that there is a scripture which has 18,000 verses and which has, you know, which has certain pastimes, you know, those pastimes are mentioned in this Puranas. So, and this scripture, which will have these pastimes, which will have 10 major characteristics of a Purana, and which is the king of the scripture, that is actually called as the Srimad Bhagavatam. This is given in other Puranas, that this is the scripture with 18,000 verses. Okay, so now this 18,000 verses can only be finished, completed, when you include the first two cantos. If you remove the first two cantos, there is no 18,000 Purana verses.
Okay. Okay.
Right? So, so see, this is the transcendental nature of the Supreme Lord and those of the empowered Vaishnavas, that they know the future and they forecast. They already mentioned these events which will be happening in the future. If you remember, just few weeks ago, I had shared one purport of Prabhupada from the Bhagavatam, where Brahmaji is actually describing certain things to Narad Muni, and in that description he is actually predicting future things also, future events. So Prabhupada writes that, you know, Brahma is actually already aware these things are yet to happen now. Because we know that the Lord and the pure devotees who are empowered, they are Trikal Jnanis. They know past, present, future. So it is already included. Right? So everyone is clear about this? Any comment or question? Are you all hearing attentively? Are you all awake?
Also, in Srimad Bhagavatam, the further incarnations like Lord Buddha has already been spoken of.
That happened
at that time. So that is also like future being.
Prediction of future is there, you know, it is there. So many characteristics of this Srimad Bhagavatam is described. And so basically what we are doing currently is we want to prove the superiority of the Smritis first. Once that is established, then we can go on and try to prove the superiority of Srimad Bhagavatam over all others. Okay. So first we have to establish that Smritis, they have equal nature as the Stutis. And these are direct statements in the Upanishads. So if you want these, you know, Shastric statements, you have to hear the podcast, or you have to, I have the transcripts also. So if someone wants, then I can send that file. Okay, so all these quotations are there. And so everyone is understanding, you know, like Nirvika.
Yeah.
Is this clear?
Yeah. Some of these things are even coming in your daily mails, right?
Huh? Daily? I just actually recently only I started. You know, I am sending these 10 transcripts every day. So I have 30 questions.
Shruti Smriti one, I felt it wasn't, or I just got like half the email. Or like, I don't know, was it that only 2 points were mentioned in that?
Yeah, what happened is, see, actually, yeah, so see, the same, in fact, that email itself, you know, I have sent, like the Shrutis and Smritis one, where I have, you know, actually, when I copy-pasted from my Word file to email, what happened is, see, the Shastric statements, they are in the image form. So when I pasted it, I think it did not show up in the email. So that's the reason I did not send the next one also, which is the superiority of Srimad Bhagavatam, by how Bhagavatam is the ultimate authority. So I did not send it because, you know, there are so many Shastric statements. I couldn't copy each and every image and then paste it. So then I just said, okay, let me just skip it. And, I will do whenever I get some time, probably at that time I will send it. But the Word file I have, you know, you can go through it. You know, if you want, I can email it to you. What I have done is basically, you know, see, this is all ready-made information. We are like, devotees like us, you know, we are all like assisting the pure devotees who have done all the job. They have done the necessary job. So Jiva Goswami is the one who has actually done everything. It is Srila Prabhupada who has done everything. So we just take from here and there, copy paste, and we just send it. Obviously, the concept that we do is an individual contribution. You know, the logic, the concept, the presentation, that is an individual contribution. But the Shastric statements, they are all assembled in Jiva Goswami's Tattva Sandarbh. And so I've just, you know, copy-pasted from there everything as it is. So he has given many, so he has cited many evidences from Upanishads and all, Mahabharata, Upanishad, the Puranas, and, you know, so like that. Right? So, yeah, I mean, you know, if someone wants it, they can just, you know, like message me on WhatsApp. I will send that word file. Okay, so now we have refuted this, the first claim, that because he does not understand the simple point that the Smriti is actually not inferior to the Shruti, and because he has not understood what is a Smriti. Okay. So, any devotee has any question or comment? Okay. I think, you know, this 14 questions that I have sent, there also...
About the idol worship, in there are two videos, na? In the other video about the idol worship is mentioned.
So that's right. I mean, that's the reason, you know, like we wanted to take one by one, you know, these things. First, like we have already covered that how Smriti is actually the it is equal to the Shrutis. And then later on, you know, we'll go ahead and we'll prove that Smritis are in fact more important because they are more relatable, they are more relevant, and they are meant for less intelligent people of Kali Yuga. Because, you know, it is easy to understand them. See, whenever someone explains you with the help of pastimes, with the help of leelas, then it is more easier to understand than using some very esoteric words. Right? So, you know, the Ityas and Puranas and the Mahabharata, these are the same things. It's a message through the example of the devotees, how one should lead one's life. So it is in the form of, it's in the form of a movie where you go and watch a movie and you actually learn a lesson. Okay, and it becomes very easy to get that essence of that, you know, movie. So same way, you know, the Mahabharata, the Ramayana and the Puranas, they are full of stories and pastimes. So it becomes very easy to relate with that. And that's how we get the essence. So now this is how we refute that point. But again, you know, so see, one of the 14 questions is that Srimad Bhagavatam is the ultimate authority. So one can come to this refutation to that, you know, the Smriti is equal to the Shruti. And then one can go ahead and one can use the references from Smritis proving that Srimad Bhagavatam is glorified in all of them as the topmost of scriptures. Okay, that's how we prove that Bhagavatam is the ultimate authority. Because we say that Smriti, in fact, is more important than the Shruti because it is completing the Shrutis. And what can complete something if it is of the same nature? Two things of opposite nature or different natures cannot complete or cannot complement each other, right? But if it is the same nature, like for example, you know, if you are wearing gold, okay, and let's say let's take example of diamond, okay, that you have a necklace and, you know, the necklace is full of diamond. Now, if one of the diamond is, you know, it is like displaced or it is, you know, lost, then obviously, what you will do is, you will replace that necklace with another diamond. You cannot replace the necklace with steel, or something which is inferior, right? Because then it will create, it will distort the thing completely. So when you can only complete something when it is of the same nature. You understand this point? Very logical. So how can the smritis complete the shrutis if they are of an inferior nature? That is not possible. So basically, when it is saying that the shruti is saying that the smritis, they complete the shrutis, it should definitely mean that the smriti is of equal nature of that of shruti. It cannot be inferior nature.
Correct.
Right? Yeah. So this is the logic. So these are some of the points that Jiva Goswami refutes. He uses this logic and, he will refute all these points. And he will establish the equality of the smriti and shrutis. And then he will go beyond that and he will say that, in fact, smritis are more important than shrutis because they are defining the essence of the shruti. They are actually explaining the meaning of the shrutis. So they are more important. And then amongst the smriti, now see, one more thing is there. So this point is refuted. Now coming to the second point where it is mentioned that the Lord's body is impersonal. So we have this also in one of our 14 questions. Some devotee has taken that question that to prove that the Lord is ultimately personal. I mean, that is the superior form of the Lord. Obviously, he's impersonal also. But now coming to this point that, see, what he's saying that he is quoting some statements from the Yajurveda and Svetavastara Upanishad saying that the Lord does not have a form. But why he is not quoting
of him? Yeah, the direct translation of that is there is no image of him.
Correct. Yeah, there is no image or form of him, right? So, but we are not saying that it is an image. We are saying that it is actually the Archa Vigraha, which means that the deity is a bona fide way to worship the Lord. Okay, it's not idol. All the material elements are used, but the material elements, it is, the Lord is actually present in them, in the material elements by the devotion of the devotees and by performing the, Pran Pratishtha ceremony. So that's how the Lord actually manifests himself in the deity form. But otherwise, before that, it is just a material form, right? So, well, see, there are two marks. There is the Bhagavat mark, there is the Rag mark, and the Panchratrik mark. In the Panchratrik mark, we have to follow rules, regulations, we have to chant mantras, invocations, and we ask the Lord to manifest in the form of deity. In Rag mark or Bhagavat mark, the devotee's devotion will actually call the Lord. He does not have to do all these things. Like, for example, Prahlad Maharaj devotion, Narsingdev directly appeared in the pillar. He did not invoke so many mantras. He did not perform Pran Pratishtha ceremony and after that Narsingdev came. Just by, devotee's prayer, a pure devotee's prayer, the Lord will manifest immediately. So this is called Bhagavat Marg. Okay. So we have to follow both things, here. Prabhupada actually gave both things here. So, there are Shastric statements in the Gopal Tapan Upanishad. In fact, it is there in some, the same Upanishad also, that it basically mentions that the Lord can see everything and he runs, he has legs, and he uses his hands and all. So that means that our acharyas they have reconciled, the Vaishnava philosophers, they have reconciled this point by saying that both things are correct. And see, it is a common principle, common principle for any sampradaya that whenever there are certain things given in the Shastra, you cannot say that one is wrong or one should be discarded and one should be accepted. Because both things should be accepted. You just have to interpret that. In fact, Vyasdev has himself written this in the Vedanta Sutra that when you have two contradictory statements present in one Shastra or different Shastra, then you cannot accept or reject one. You have to interpret one in order to reconcile with the other statement. Okay, because right. Shastra is Shastra. It is the, it cannot be. So everything is there in the, whatever is there in the Shastra, it is, everything is true about, what the statements, like whatever it is. It cannot, we cannot reject or say.
there was another video in the YouTube where Guru, I think he's a senior Guru who has spoken, and he has directly addressed Dr. Nayak there. He says that there is some speaker whose name we should not take, who has tried to quote from Yajurveda and said that the idol worship is prohibited in the Vedas. He says the translation that is, or the interpretation there is mistaken. What he says is there is no form of Lord. That is not the right interpretation. The interpretation is that there is no image that can be a replica of the beauty of the Lord. No image can replicate that beauty of the Lord. That is what that statement actually means. So that means that beauty of Lord as a person, when you see him, you cannot duplicate that beauty, because that beauty is it is very, very high and transcendental and elevated. And that may, we cannot replicate.
See, See, they don't understand one simple thing, that, you know, they talk about Allah and all that. And so one time, you know, Radhanath Maharaj, he was challenged with a question from a Muslim that, you know, about the same thing, that, you know, they were talking about the finding, you know, certain flaws in this worship and all that. So then Radhanath Maharaj, you know, he asked this person that, he started asking him that, is your God all powerful? So he said yes. Then he asked him, is your God all knowing, or your, you know, Allah is all knowing? He said yes. And then, you know, finally he said at the end, after asking, you know, these questions, he said at the end, Maharaj asked, is your God all attractive? And this person said yes. So then Maharaj said, then actually all attractive in Sanskrit language, it means Krishna. So you also agree that the God is Krishna, that Supreme God is Krishna. So see, the point is, so the point is that they also definitely, you know, they will accept that the God is, you know, Supreme God is actually all powerful, and, you know, he has infinite power. Now, it's a very simple thing. If God has infinite power, by his choice, by his will, can't he manifest in the form of deity? When he is there in the heart of everyone, a super soul. Now, what is super soul? Super soul is inside the body, inside the material body of a person. So when super soul can be manifested in a material body, why can't the Lord manifest in the deity form also? And as Prabhupada also said, you know, many times, that you say that God is present everywhere, then how can you deny that he is also present in the deity? Because you said it, he is everywhere, so he is also in the deity. So why, you know, it's a simple thing. So if you say that he cannot manifest in this material form, that means you are restricting his all potency. Power potency, yeah. Right?
Correct.
You are limiting. See, that's the reason our this philosophy is so strong, because see, Achintya Bhedabhed Tattva, we have certain pastimes of the Lord where he is also getting covered up by his own yogmaya potency. Like, you know, he also forgets, and the Lord also gets bewildered, right? And the Lord is also having emotions. He also cries for his devotees. So, see, now if you say that the Lord cannot do these things, that means that you are again restricting the Lord. If you say that the Lord cannot forget, again you are restricting the Lord. So the Lord is full of contradictions. He is the resolver of all the contradictions. Okay, so that's the reason all the contradictions, they are in perfect harmony with the Lord. They all resolve in the Lord. So that is perfect understanding of God, because it contains everything. So we don't deny, you know, that the Lord is impersonal. He is also impersonal, and he is also personal. Everything is there, you know. So they only focus on these things, and they do not accept that, okay, certain things are possible like that. Because their idea is anything contained or, you know, connected with the material nature will create inferiority of the Lord. Like, will create, see, that is the reason they think that if someone is worshipping the deity, that means that the deity wants to become God. So that is the reason they are very fanatics about deity worship, and they have, like, you know, we know the history right from the beginning. They have destroyed all the temples because what they feel is that nothing material can compare with the Lord, and if something will compare with the Lord, that means that thing can actually be equal to God, which is not acceptable for them. So that's the reason they will, for them it's an offense actually to like deity worship or deity form. It's an offense because what they feel is this this material form is going to compete with the Lord. Okay, so it's like, you know, very funny. You know? The logic is very funny. So so they don't understand the simple. See, now the problem is, another problem is, I don't think they have a concept of Paramatma. I mean, I'm not sure, like, you know, I don't think they have a concept of Paramatma, you know, where they believe that Paramatma is existing in everyone's heart. because, see, in our case, the Paramatma is there because we have reincarnation, we have karmas, but they don't believe in reincarnation. For them, there is only one life. So if there is only one life, then what is the need of Paramatma? Obviously, the life is given by Paramatma. You know, we call Paramatma, they may probably call it as Allah. But our, the Paramatma feature is also a personal feature. And when we connect the personality to the Paramatma or to the Lord in a personal, you know, this in the material world, that Paramatma feature has certain tasks, he has certain roles, certain duties to perform, which is basically that, you know, as we discussed in Bhagavad Gita class, that he is a witness, he is a sanctioner, he is a life giver, and at the same time, he also inspires us to connect with the Lord in the future. Right? So he is actually taking a very personal role. He is not like a impersonal aspect. Okay? So now for them, I am not sure if they believe in Paramatma feature or Super Soul or something. But maybe they probably might say that Allah is everywhere, you know, he is present in everyone. That they might say, but, you know, this concept of Paramatma is a more personal feature of the Lord. Hmm. Right? Yeah, so this is the problem, you know. So this, you know, this also we have refuted. That there are statements in the Shrutis itself which actually talk about, now okay, one of the most important statements which our acharyas say is that raso vaisa. So raso vaisa means the supreme absolute truth is full of ras. Now it is obvious that when, so what is ras? Ras is a mellow, and the mellow cannot exist if the Lord is not a person. That is obvious. So this is, you know, again, the statement from the Upanishad. And there are several other statements which actually directly talk about that. Okay. So, see, now for us, Bhagavatam is actually the most sufficient authority. We can quote Bhagavatam and everything is closed. But many people, they don't believe, you know, so much. They don't have so much faith in the Bhagavatam. So then we have to quote Upanishads also and quote from Shrutis, and then we can refute. Okay, so there are statements in Shastra which talks about the personal form of God, and at the same time there are statements which actually also talk about the deity worship in the Shastra. And so what the statement in the Shastra does talk about is basically the material form, that the Lord does not have eyes, the Lord does not have legs. At the same time, you know, it is mentioned that the Lord's hands and legs are everywhere. So how to reconcile? So we reconcile by saying that he has transcendental eyes and legs, and he does not have any material form. So he does not have material eyes, material legs like that. Okay. So that's how we refute his second claim, you know, about the deity form. Okay, so is this clear, everyone?
Yes,
are you all there?
Yeah, I'm there.
Okay. See, and the biggest flaw in their philosophy is, as you know, if you all know, this, you know, one time Radha Govind Maharaj had an exchange with a Muslim person. And so he was asking, you know, this Muslim person got, you know, he was quite irritating because, you know, he was feeling that, you know, Maharaj is worshipping some form. And so he was like quite fanatic in his approach. And so he was conversing with him, and finally Maharaj was asking him that, okay, you are praying to Allah, so how does your Allah hear? Then you are calling out to Allah, you are praying to that, you know, like I don't know what they call that, you know, they have some kind of samadhi or, you know, something like that, and they worship that. So like, so then Maharaj was saying that, okay, like, how do you see your Lord? You know, and how do you pray your Lord? Does your Lord hear your prayers? And then this Muslim person said that, of course he hears. So then Maharaj asked him that, how does he hear? So that person got confused. So he was asking, you know, so finally he said, yeah, you know, he has ears, he has legs, he has eyes, the Lord has eyes and all. Then finally, so then see, there is no difference. If they believe that the Lord or their Allah is hearing them and he is seeing everything, okay, whether now we, you know, if he has eyes or legs, or whether he does not have, how can they say that the Lord does not have? And how do they know that? And what is the difference? See, let's say, for example, they believe that the Lord hears, the Lord can see, the Lord can walk, the Lord can talk, all that, okay? They believe like that. If I say that the Lord has mouth to speak, he has ears to hear, and he has eyes to see, what is wrong in that? What you know, what will happen? Even if I give features to the Lord, what difference is it going to make? What is the problem? So obviously no one has seen anything, you know, like we don't see that the air has, I mean, obviously, you know, the air cannot hear, the air cannot see, you know, whatever is impersonal, whether without personal features, obviously how can they see, how can they interact? So even if you assign these physical features to this impersonal form, how is that going to make a difference to them? It's a simple thing that they don't understand. Like, so what they say is, you know, these things are made easier for us because we cannot relate with something which is impersonal. That's why they are superior to us. These Muslims are superior to us because they are already advanced to a stage where they can, you know, think of the Lord as an impersonal, you know, feature. You know, Allah as an impersonal feature of the Lord. But the only, you know, I would question that even if we give features, what will make a difference? You are saying that the Lord is hearing. We are also saying the Lord is hearing. He is seeing, he is walking, talking, all that. The only difference is, you know, if we are worshipping a form, what is the big problem in this? How does that cause an offense to the Supreme? See, if he is impersonal, all these things should not matter to that Supreme. It's very funny, very, you know, like, I mean, there is no logic, there is no substance in this, you know, like, the fact that the Lord is having problem with this, to assign him some kind of form, why the, see, impersonal feature, first of all, does not have any senses, does not, it cannot interact only with anyone. How can the impersonal start giving instructions? And then what is the purpose of creating the living entities? These things, see, these things are like, they don't have any answer only. Why the impersonal feature would feel offense? And if that impersonal feature is feeling offense, it means he is displaying the symptoms of a personality. So it's so funny.
Yeah, so, that's a very good point.
Huh?
That's a very good point. Like.
Yeah, I mean, it is
emotions.
It's a word jugglery, nothing else. What they are doing is, you know, Shankaracharya is same, you know, nasti, 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 neti, 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 you know, and Buddha, nasti, nasti, nasti. So, I mean, it is like they are just, you know, making use of Sanskrit language and they are trying to interpret in a way. Now, see, unfortunately, what has happened is Shankaracharya is a great supporter of impersonal philosophy, Mayavadis and impersonalist. So, and you know, this is something that our Hindu Dharma has been facing since a long time, this Advaitwad and Dvaitavad. So, they will definitely find shelter and support in the Advait aspect because their philosophy is actually the same thing. So, that's the reason, now if you ask any Advaitwad, any Mayavad, they don't consider Bhagavatam as a supreme scripture. They don't consider the Bhagavad Gita as a supreme scripture. For them also, Vedas, Shrutis is actually the supreme because there are many statements of impersonal features in the Shrutis. So for them, the Shruti is actually more superior. Plus, these impersonal Mayavadis, they don't chant the holy name of the Lord. They don't dance in Kirtan. They will do fire yagyas because they don't believe that the Yuga Dharma is Harinam Sankirtan. So the followers of Vedas, they generally will do yagyas, which is described in all these Upanishads, the four Vedas. Right? So this is the biggest problem, that unfortunately in our Sanatana Dharma, we have this branch of Advaitwad also, and which is, you know, like if you consider, apart from Vaishnava philosophy, all other religions of the world, they are mostly Advaitwad. And why? Because the problem is that they don't have any knowledge of God. See, in that devotee, our devotee, you know, he does mention that, you know, you are talking about this hell, heaven, and the Vedas generally talk about that much only. But our Bhagavatam is going beyond that. Okay, that Bhagavatam is actually giving description about the Lord's abode and all that. But where is that information? You say talk about Allah and all that, you will, you know, go to Jannat and you will go to hell and all that. You know, where is that information? What do you do there? I mean, there is a beautiful description of the Jannat that they are describing, but then what are you going to do there?
Prabhuji, there they say that they have all these beautiful hoor over there who are going to serve you, some 60, 70 hoors. I don't know, I forgot the count. Hoor means like apsara types, ladies now, like those types. So that is why they are propelled to go to heaven, like Jannat. So again, it's a very... Hello? Hello?
I think Prabhuji got disconnected.
I think after 2 hours it gets automatically disconnected, na? Something of that.
Yeah.
So are we both the only ones on this call yet?
I'm not sure about it. We will never get to know that.
Terrible, I'm there.
Vandana Mataji is there.
Yeah, Haribol, I got disconnected. Okay, alright. Anyways, you know, I hope that everyone has got the gist of what we are discussing. These things are also refuted because impersonal philosophy itself is full of flaws. There are so many defects and there is no answer to these questions that, you know, why the hell the jivas are created, what is the purpose, because ultimately the absolute truth is insentient, right? So then what is, like, does not make sense how the jivas are coming. It becomes like an atheistic philosophy. Ultimately what they are saying is everything is happening randomly. They talk about, you know, say what they do is they just talk about, oh, you know, the Vidya potency, when it is when Brahman is covered by the Vidya potency, then you know, the Jiva becomes God, and when it is covered by the Avidya potency, then one is one jiva, you know, goes to the material world and he gets entangled. So then the question is that what potency you are talking about, where this potency comes from, this vidya avidya you are talking about, how does it exist, what is the source of that, why it is existing? Because the impersonal is an insentient being, it cannot, you know, do anything as such. So all this is like just bogus. There is no, and then, you know, you can become God, you can merge in God. It does not make sense, you know, completely illogical philosophy. They themselves, they don't answer all these questions. That's the reason, you know, no karma also, just one life. Now, see, the difference is that, okay, our followers believe, Mayavad followers, they will believe in karma, reincarnation, but they will, Christianity and, you know, in Islam, they don't believe. I think probably there are certain branches of Christianity where some of them, they do believe in reincarnation, some of them don't believe in reincarnation. So, completely, you know, like, full of defects. See, and the problem is, he is speaking big things about, you know, our philosophy, but what about the answer to these questions? Why is he trying to prove using our scriptures? You know, first answer the question, the simple question that any layman has is that how are we created? Why we are here? Where we came from? Right? Answer these questions first. Forget about, you know, trying to prove what is superior and what is, you know, this, that. You first, because see, everything is beginning from that original point. Your entire, the direction will come from that starting point. If you say that the starting point is having sentiments, or if he has created us for a reason, then you cannot go in a direction leading to impersonal feature of the Lord. Then you are in the wrong direction. If the starting point is an insentient being, then okay, then you say that okay, but then these questions are not answered. So what he is doing is, he is just focusing on these things and he is neglecting to give answers for these questions. Or if he gives answers, you know, they say, yeah, it just happened. You just have to accept it. That's funny. It's like atheistic theory. Okay. So I hope, you know, we had some logical, you know, output from this discussion. And if there are further comments or questions, then we can discuss in the next class, because it is like already 11:30 now. So, and maybe I think one or two things also he has claimed. And obviously, you know, the way that he said that, you know, I met a very big person in ISKCON, that is simply rubbish. I don't think, or even if he has met someone, you know, that leader must have given some good answer, but he's just twisting it. Because
yeah,
first and foremost thing is that no ISKCON devotee, every ISKCON devotee knows that the deity worship, it is actually transcendental. It is not material. Everyone knows that in ISKCON.
Yeah. Okay. He is trying to quote the senior person as...
randomly, yeah, he's just doing it randomly. Just to see, he's a fool and he's making fool out of his audience also. They are also fools. Or all his followers, they are just believing him because they don't see the truth. They are not going to see the truth. So if they have the guts, then they should. And unfortunately, what happened, Ravi Shankar had a debate with him. But what happened is, I think, He did not continue the debate, you know, further. So, like, his followers, they all felt that, you know, Ravi Shankar was debated, you know, defeated completely. Okay, but, you know, I saw one video where Ravi Shankar is addressing his followers after that debate. And he is very clearly saying that this person is a fool and he does not know anything, because there are, and Ravi Shankar also says that there are statements in the Shastra which actually talk about the form of the Lord and how to worship the Lord. So he is just in the denial mood and he is not accepting those things. So he, and then, you know, he's making a very nice point also, that when you invite someone repeatedly, then when the person comes, generally you respect them, you honor them, and you appreciate them. But here this person invited me so many times, and finally I went, and he just wants to somehow, he wants to slander me in front of everyone. So one can easily understand what the motive of the person is. So anyways, you know, like, I think, yeah, in our ISKCON case, you know, if someone knows some Sanskrit language, you know, proper grammar and all that, that devotee is sufficient to defeat him. You know, it's not a big deal. But yeah, some Sanskrit background has to be there, because finally the thing will come on interpretation of Sanskrit, you know, because this Shastra is talking about both things. So, you know, one has to actually know Sanskrit language. So then any devotee who can know Sanskrit can defeat this person. Not a big deal. It's just that, you know, what he does is, you know, he is always inviting people in his gathering. Why don't he go to a gathering of Hindus? You know, in front of Hindus, where there are many learned Sanskrit scholars, and you can have a debate with them. Why is always, you know, the entire population, the crowd, you'll see it is maximum Muslim crowd. So that is all strategy, you know. It is just to make fool out of it. Yeah. Okay, anyways. All right, so we'll continue next time. Thank you all the devotees for joining. Hare Krishna, Dhanvataram.